Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and co-created. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within art, beats, and lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Welcome to Switched on Pop. I'm musicologist Nate Sloan.
And I'm songwriter Charlie Harding. And joining me in the studio is Kay Flay, songwriter, rapper, singer, producer.
Yeah.
And we're really lucky to have her with us. She's going to talk with us about today's topic, Ariana Grande. And then later in the second half of the show, we'll be talking about her song, Blood in the Cut.
Hey, guys.
Multi-hyphenate, I think, is the phrase.
Multi-hyphenate. I like that. Put that on my tombstone.
Okay, Flay, so happy to have you on board. I could not be more excited for the subject of today's episode. Today, we talk about the trials of one Ariana Grande. I have a lot to say about one song in particular.
I'm so excited.
That's actually from last year, but it's still all over the radio. I think it's totally worth talking about. And I think if you'll come along with me on a voyage of discovery with this particular song, and then we'll zoom out to talk about her persona in a sort of a larger way.
All right.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I like
so
it.
We're gonna. This is kind of wedge shaped. It starts very small. Before we do anything else, though, we have to listen to what I think this might be the greatest straight up pop song on the radio at the moment.
Bold.
Let's Spin Into You by Ariana Grande. You made it.
We made it through.
We made it.
Yeah.
We should have kept going.
I know. I defy you to stop that easily. It's so infectious. I immediately took notice of this song because it passed the hardest test in my book for a good pop song, which is the grocery test, which is if I linger in the produce aisle when it's playing in the grocery store, just kind of holding like some wet romaine lettuce for an uncomfortable amount of time, then it's a really good pop song.
Word.
And at this point, we need to do one of our reveals. This song is produced by someone we've talked about before on our show. In some ways, it's the person that all roads in modern popular music lead to.
Yeah.
He's like the Wizard of Oz. This is a Max Martin production.
Of course it
right.
is.
The enigmatic, reclusive Swedish genius and his regular team of collaborators. And this song, I thought for a long time as kind of like an intricate puzzle. like a Rubik's Cube or something. And then I and then my analogy or metaphor shifted, mutated. Now I think of it more almost like a piece of trompe-l'oeil art.
Wow.
Are you familiar with that term, Kay Flay? Did you take any art history courses?
No. What does, how do you spell that?
That would be T-R-O-M-P-E.
Okay.
Dash L apostrophe O-I-E-I-L,
so
I think.
That's another hyphen, first of all.
Yeah.
That's kind of the theme. No, I have no idea what that is, but I would like to know.
C'est français.
It translates to deceiving the eye and refers to a kind of painting that developed, I think, mainly during the Baroque era, where the painting fools you. It tricks you. It shows you something that seems like it's there, but it's not. Like, one example would be when you look up at a ceiling and it's painted so that it appears as though you're looking up at the sky.
Mm.
Right.
But you're just looking at, you know, a plaster ceiling that's been so intricately painted with the right shadow and light to actually fool you into thinking that you're suddenly looking up at the sky, but you're not. It's just a painting.
So what are we looking into on this song?
Yeah, where are you taking us?
I think the song is deceiving our ears constantly. Nothing is quite what it seems, and it all interlocks together in this very intricate and somewhat diabolical way.
You have to take us wherever you're at, because I'm so lost.
Okay, we start with the first sound we hear in the song.
Okay.
That deep, jagged, super syncopated bass.
I'm so into you, I can barely breathe. And all I wanna do is to fall in deep.
Okay, so it's like, wow, 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 wow.
Yeah, I mean, okay. So first of all, like, what an incredibly funky syncopated bass line. It just dances on all the upbeats, never hitting a downbeat. You can tell because we have that bass drum going kind of forward to the floor, thud, 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 thud.
Right.
And then all around it is just dancing the rhythm of that bass line.
Dig it.
And then the bass line sounds kind of complex to me at first. It's moving from these different chords. It's kind of hard for me to follow.
Yep.
But this is, I think, the first trick that the song is playing on us.
How so?
Because if we slow it down and just take this bass line one note at a time, mm-hmm. we see that actually what it's doing is very simple, just in terms of pitches.
What's going on?
We start on the home key, yeah. The home note of this song, F sharp. And then the bass line moves up. It goes F sharp, G sharp, A, making its way up the minor scale, and then it keeps going up. It goes up to B, and then this is the trick.
Okay.
It doesn't directly just keep going up the scale.
Yeah.
And we do, but not quite in the way we expect, because it doesn't go directly up. It drops down to that D. Rather than go up to that D, it drops down to it.
Huh.
And then we hang on that D for a while, and then we go up. And then right before the bass line repeats, we go up to E, and we get back to the very start of the song, F sharp. So we've come exactly back to where we've started in literally the most probably simple way you could possibly write a bass line.
It just walks up the scale.
It just walks up the scale one note at a time.
With a funny twist where it drops down.
With a funny twist where it drops down and doing it in this very rhythmic way where it's kind of hard to follow. Again, I think it's tricking you into seeming more complex than it is, but it's actually just the simplest thing in the world. It's like doe, a deer, a female deer.
Doe, a deer, a female deer. Ray, a drop of golden sun.
Ray, a drop of golden sun. It's just going, I mean, literally, that's all this bass line is. It's just going up one note at a time. It's the most simple thing in the world.
Doe, a deer is pretty catchy. Yeah. You know what I mean, though? Now that you say it, I'm like, I do know how that goes.
For sure.
With the rhythm and with the way it kind of starts and stops and slowly moves up and then drops down and then comes back to the beginning, it's like constantly entertaining and surprising. And again, tricks your ear into thinking it's not the simple stepwise ascension. It sounds like something else.
Okay, trick number one.
Now, we're not even going to move very far yet.
Okay.
We're just hanging on trick number one. I'm not even close to done with this bass line.
Okay.
How would you describe the timbre, the tone color?
Okay, I have a thought on this, because when I heard it this morning, I'm really interested in songs that the instrumentation mirrors the theme of the song.
Yeah.
And I feel like... And maybe I'm wrong on the point of this song, but it seems like, you know, she's sort of trying to be coy. Like, they're in this situation where, like, nothing's defined.
Right.
They like each other. No one's made a move. And so the bass line, it's like a low pass thing. We don't ever hear, like, the high end. And then when the chorus hits, we get, like, the full synthesizer sound. And there's, like, the high end, and it's, you know, grimy. And that's when she's like, do this.
Wow, I was going to say it sounds like a duck, but that's a lot smarter.
I don't know, but I was thinking about it, and that's what I thought this morning when I was listening. I don't know if that vibes with your vibe, Nate.
That vibes so hard with my vibe, actually.
Okay, good.
And I actually am like a little red-faced because I meant to talk about the meaning of this song, too, and you already beat me to it. Yeah, I totally agree. This song is all about, to me, like kind of closing the gap, you know, moving from talking to the next stage in a romantic relationship.
Yep.
Right? As the chorus says, a little less conversation and a little more touch my body.
Nate, please.
I know. I choked up a little just saying that line.
Yeah.
Well, Kay Flay, you're one to talk when we listen to Blood in the Cut later.
I know. Well, get ready.
But yeah, no, I totally agree. I am going to make the same exact argument as Kay Flay just presented.
Okay.
This bass line transforms as the song builds, as this moment of the climactic encounter builds and builds as well. But there's something else that I didn't detect listening to this track until... I isolated the bass line. This bass is like another trick. It's not what it appears to be.
Okay.
Yeah, I did think the ooh man voice was interesting.
I'd heard that one, but now I'm hearing something else.
There's another one.
The ooh man voice that I couldn't describe it better. I think that's like a little clue as to what this bass line actually is, which is not a synthesizer at all.
Huh.
But as we hear this sound transform and it starts to change, it starts to become like kind of breathier.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Right? It's starting to open up a little bit.
Doesn't she say I can't catch my breath at some point in the song too?
She might.
Yeah, she does.
Sounds like something she'd say.
It's transforming itself in front of our ears.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden it's revealed what it truly is.
Ooh. That is really awesome.
That's really nice.
Isn't that wild? So that was this airy, breathy vocal.
Wow, that is a really cool track. I had no idea that was going on.
You know what's funny about hearing that is when I heard this song, like, it kind of made me think about the Bee Gees.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's the tempo or something about it, but like it felt like a disco. I don't know, like.
Yeah.
I don't know what tempo it is, like maybe 110, or, you know, it's like dancey, but still not super fast. And hearing these men's like voices makes me think low key is a Bee Gees track. Like, couldn't you? Right?
In fact, the next part I was going to talk about, I think, is a very Bee Gees-esque sort of technique.
All right.
Which is the moment towards the end of the song. This is the next trick. So I guess we're on trick number three now.
Yeah.
This is after the bridge, and we get a very different version of the chorus as we've heard it. Cool. So this moment, given what we were just talking about, this moment is really interesting to me, because that moment when it comes out of the bridge, you expect it to be this big dynamic moment, and it turns out to be this like kind of tighter, quieter moment where all of a sudden all we hear are voices. We have the voices of the Bee Gees men in the background, the ah-ah-ahs. And then we have Ariana Grande singing the melody, but then we also have a, like another chorus of Ariana Grande's kind of responding to that main melody. We have another kind of puzzle here, another kind of trick in which everything perfectly fits together.
Yeah.
Like a little puzzle. And in a way, I don't know if this is intentional, but this reminds me so much of another kind of one of these techniques that was popular in the Baroque era, but in music, in some ways, maybe the equivalent of like trompe l'oeil in painting would be a technique called hocket.
So this is like a little bit of a classical masters segment that you're taking us on.
This is a mini classical masters. Yeah.
Okay. What is a hocket?
What is a hocket? Great question. A hocket is when two different musical parts fit together in a way where whenever one has a rest or a silence, the other one has a note, so that they are constantly kind of taking turns, going back and forth very, very quickly.
Okay.
Great.
We can hear a short example of this in the music of Johann Sebastian Bach.
I like the hocket.
That's like DNA. It makes me think of DNA.
What is yes. DNA?
Oh like my God, I love that. Yeah.
Like a double helix.
Oh, like a double helix.
You know, just like they kind of never, they're like forever bound and yes. make something beautiful, but never appear at the same time.
I thought DNA for a second was another like really cool 70s disco reference no. of a band that I didn't know.
I only know so much about the 70s. But yeah, that's really cool, Nate. I like that.
It sounds like maybe I've convinced you that here again is another one of these tricks, a moment where we have this incredibly complex hocket, if you will, where all these different voices are intricately connected. I love that, as in a strand of DNA, of nucleotides. And there's one other moment I want to talk about.
Okay.
Which is the moment right before this section, the bridge.
Ah, Max Martin writes great bridges.
He does. And this is such a classic one because, it just becomes like really open and airy all of a sudden.
Yeah.
So trick number four, some ways on the surface looks like a very kind of straightforward bridge. We have like kind of these instrumental hits, da, da, da. And then there's a response from the vocalist. Let's have a listen to the bridge. Okay.
Cool.
So, yeah, great bridge. And it sounds like a bridge should. It sounds new. It sounds like something we haven't heard before, kind of contrasts, changes up the texture and the rhythm. And yet, I think that we have heard this before.
Hmm.
We're both looking at each other like...
We're giving each other side eye because you're not here.
Yeah, I know. I feel like this is the moment. I'm like in an SVU episode where I'm like... It was you the whole time. Okay, I think we've heard this before, this very percussive hit section. Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah.
Sounds new, but I want to suggest we've heard this before, and I'll present my case by taking us to the pre-chorus, where there's this little kind of obligato, a little ad lib, a little vocal interjection.
He really likes big words.
I might be showing off a little. That's really high. It doesn't have any words. It's just like this wordless thing. It goes, ooh.
All right.
Here, have a listen.
That's extraordinary.
We got it. We got it. You do the back to back.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So basically, he took that little ad lib ooh and turned it into a whole section.
And turned it into a whole freaking section.
Ooh, wow. This thing is a puzzle.
It's crazy, right? It's like I just picture when I listen to the song, I just picture in my mind like some just like Rococo, like golden mystery box or something, and like everything
that like unfolds on multiple sides and like folds back into itself. And
yes, yeah. Exactly. See, Charlie gets it. Charlie, this is why we work.
Charlie
together,
understands.
Know?
Well, yeah. Okay, I have a question, which is that so this is basically like foreshadowing.
Yes.
Right?
Ooh, yeah.
So sort of.
Right.
Like, is that common? Is that good? Does that help? Like, are we already used to it subliminally, so we like it more when we hear it in the bridge? Is that what's going on?
Well, I think definitely, because one of the trends that we've seen a lot happening this year, we talked a lot about the Chainsmokers this year on the show. Mm-hmm. And rather than jumping right into the chorus of a song, there have been these little intro sections where there's sort of a manipulated vocal that hints at the chorus to come, and then they jump right into the verse.
Gotcha.
Do you know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. Here, let me play one thing.
Okay, yeah.
If we listen to the Chainsmokers closer, it happens right at the very beginning.
Yeah, it's happening at the beginning.
Yeah, I think foreshadowing is a great word, and I think it's another raison d'etre for being there could be that keeping the French theater.
Do you speak French?
Analysis.
He just knows French phrases. He just knows.
Goes back to what something Kay Flay rightly brought up, and that probably hasn't come up enough in this analysis I'm presenting so far, which is, again, like the lyrics and the message of this song, which is, like we said, trying to close the gap, trying to get someone to shut up and kiss you, basically. So I feel like maybe this little phrase, which originally we heard when it says, so waiting for you to make a move before I make a move, and then kind of coming like right before the final chorus of the song, when we hear it again in the bridge, is maybe kind of one more push, again, reminding us of that sound and of its meaning, where, you know, I'm waiting for you. Mm-hmm. I got to give you. So maybe those are connected lyrically.
Oh,
I like that idea.
Oh, wow.
That's a good one.
Yeah. I mean, and I get that, too. When I listen to the song and I think of something that my wife teases me about all the time, which is the first time we went out, she like was just waiting for me to kiss her, just like stop talking and like just waiting. And I was just like
incredibly obtuse,
just probably like I am right now, just talking and talking and talking. And then I tried to kiss her, and I was like on this lawn chair, and like as I leaned over it, like the back's like snapped down, and I was so embarrassed by that, then it took me another 3 hours to work up the nerve to go for it again.
Wow.
So,
hey, one thing to interject really quick, I just thought of.
Yeah, please.
About the foreshadowing.
Yeah.
I think she says the words into you in the first line of the song.
Yes, you're totally right.
Title.
Yeah, the very first lyric is I'm so into you.
So that's kind of interesting.
Oh, that is interesting. That's the first lyric.
Like if just on the foreshadowing tip. I don't know what we're that's just where my mind went. I was like, doesn't she say that?
I also something that came up for me that I heard a bunch of times was when she sings that line where she descends, I'm so into you. She sings down the scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But she doesn't land on the final note.
That's right. You have to wait.
Instead, like the music picks it up and it like kind of wants to keep going back recursively.
Yeah.
Right? It's actually, I think, how the first chorus lands.
Yeah. No, you're totally right.
Yeah. Check this out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so this is the Song of Circles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It keeps bringing us back.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah, another circle. And that's so interesting because that downward line happens at the very end of the ascending bass pattern.
Right.
Right? Because it's the last line you hear before the chorus restarts.
Oh, so they're going on counterpoint.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is like, a Hockett. Once again. Well, it's, not yeah. exactly, but kind of.
It's very Baroque.
It's very Baroque.
It is very, yeah.
It may not
yeah.
be Hockett, but it's very Baroque.
It's very, oh no, I got a hot stock tip on a Bach Hockett that I like to eat with my hot pocket when I'm in Pawtucket with my...
hot chocolate.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Playing Bop It. So, yes, and at this point, I want to take a, I think we need to take a quick break.
Yeah, we need a breather.
Gather ourselves, but when we come back, I want to take this kind of musical analysis and transpose it to someone we haven't talked about enough, who is the singer of this song, Ariana Grande.
Great.
I want to suggest that in addition to this track kind of having more than meets the ear, so does Ariana Grande herself. So stay tuned.
Support for this show comes from Art, Beats, and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art, Beats, and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art, Beats, and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu.
Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Welcome back to Switched on Pop. We are deep in it with my co-host Charlie Harding and our special guest Kay Flay. Now we
is that your call sign?
I just made it my call
That's
sign.
That's a good call sign.
Thank you. There's a pigeon entering the room now.
Into you, Ariana Grande's smash hit of a little less conversation, a little more touch of my body. Full of these tricks of the ear, a bass line that turns out to be a human voice, interlocking rhythms, a bass line that sounds very complex but turns out to be just moving up the scale and reusing a little vocal ad-lib from the pre-chorus as the bridge. All of these tricks reveal a song that might be more than you expect on first listen, and I think that might be true of Ariana Grande herself. This singer is emblematic of a theme that's come up on our show before as we analyze music. Recently, we talked about Tove Lo and her song Cool Girl.
It's a good song.
And I think there's a diminishment of the creative powers of these female pop stars that goes on. And I'm guilty of it. I think a lot of the media is guilty of it. Sort of condescending attitude and as... Ariana Grande herself suggests an attitude in which everything about that singer is talked about except her music.
Mm.
I found an article in which CNN described her as a pint-sized pop princess, which, while lovely alliteration, is also rather insulting, I think, to a serious artist.
Yeah.
And when she goes on, say, a radio show, this is what she has to deal with.
If you could use makeup or your phone one last time, which one would you pick? Is this what you think time. Girls have trouble choosing between?
Yeah, I, absolutely.
Is this men assuming that that's what girls would have to choose between?
Now, this is not a question. Can you really go anywhere without your cell phone?
Yes.
How long can you go without looking at Twitter?
Many hours. I like to be present and talking.
Good quality. Like
eye contact.
Ladies, learn. Listen and learn, ladies.
Boys, learn.
I'm speechless. How insulting to have a serious artist come on your show and ask them if they have makeup or their. I mean, it boggles my mind.
Yeah, it's crazy. What adds to this as well is that she's like a pretty legit actor. I mean, she's like really funny. She hosted SNL. I mean, she's like a multi-talented. She's not just a musician.
Have you had interviews like this in promoting your work?
I have not that bad of an interview, but she's also in like the super pop radio world, which I feel like is maybe harder in some ways. But yeah, I think there's a definite bias in terms of the questions you're asked. And just the initial ways that people perceive you. And I feel like that's got to be really frustrating.
Yeah.
I mean, it's frustrating for me in small ways, but I'm sure it's incredibly frustrating for her in big ways.
I think listening to Ariana Grande a lot recently, I have so much respect for her. Like Kayfley was saying, I think she's hysterical. I think she's like a really pretty good actress as well. And her voice is crazy.
Her voice is crazy.
Yeah. Her vocal, and it's not just the hitting the high notes, it's the vocal control.
It's crazy.
Yes.
Right? Because within this song, you hear it's like there's 8 different characters of Ariana Grande.
Yes. But also, I mean, let's talk about the high notes.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
That was insane.
That's like superhuman.
Nate, I'm not sure I caught that. Could you sing it back for me?
I've a little laryngitis. Otherwise I'd be all over that. The moment that kind of broke the secret of Ariana Grande wide open for me was watching this performance of her doing another one of her songs, Dangerous Woman, a cappella, without any processing or effects or anything, just live a cappella. We can just listen to a second of that. Again, I think it's pretty stunning. I want to save it for later, the taste of flavor, because I'm a taker, because I'm a giver. It's only nature. I live for danger. Oh, that you guys get a skin. Oh my God, don't you stop.
Oof. Wow. That's speechless.
I don't have much commentary there. I'm just astonished. And that's great, but that's not all. Ariana Grande, I also discovered, is very into cutting edge musical technology.
Okay.
In her live show, she does something kind of incredible. She uses these, I'm not totally sure on how this works, but she uses these gloves that were designed by the musician Imogene Heap in collaboration with some scientists. and they're gloves that are hooked up to your amplified voice, and you use hand motions to control and manipulate your voice as you sing.
What?
So it's like a theremin with gloves?
Yeah. Actually, I didn't think of that, voice. But yeah.
Or like something? I don't know.
Yeah. No. I think that's totally it.
Yeah.
A theremin with gloves that transforms your own voice.
The crowd is so excited. That's amazing.
That's awesome.
We gotta get you some gloves.
I know. I think I need gloves.
Yeah. I think they're only $2,000, so in a way, listening and watching this, it reminds me of a lot of the sounds on, say, Bon Iver's most recent album. It might be over soon. And yet, I don't really see her receiving the same kind of accolades from highbrow music publications that someone like Bon Iver is. And I think this comes back to a perception of her as not serious, as unintelligent, as not in charge of her own sort of musical destiny. And that seems utterly bogus to me after exploring her work in more depth.
I agree, bogus.
Definitely bogus. I disagree with you on one thing, Nate.
What's that?
About highbrow music publications, because as far as highbrow goes, you are about as highbrow as it gets. So you're a good counterexample.
Oh shucks. So stepping, I mean, there's so much more to say about the song, about Ariana Grande, but stepping back, this is my case. This is my closing argument. Into You, a song with perhaps a simple surface that the further you dig reveals more and more tricks, making what is on the superficial surface appear simpler than it actually is. Maybe something similar happening with the song singer Ariana Grande herself. We are given this picture of her that seems very simple. The pint-sized pop princess, when actually beneath the surface there's so much more going on. There is artistry there.
Incredible artistry. We're nodding.
We're nodding.
I'm nodding too. We're all
in,
nodding.
In like solemn agreement and ooh, sadness.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, yeah, solemnity and celebration at the same time. I think that's equanimity.
Yes.
And that's what I got. Into You.
Beautiful. I'm into you, Nate.
Same. We're into Ariana.
We're all into Ariana. Yeah.
Oh, big I'm time. So glad.
And also, I feel like we're used to hearing like tremendously great vocal performances because of technology. But again, like in a live setting, she is tremendously great. I hate that I've just said tremendous. I believe it's because of the president, and that is really horrifying me. Okay,
it's
I'm
huge.
So sorry. Okay, anyway, rescind tremendous, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it is the dishonest, crooked media that's made you think otherwise. So I understand.
I really am overwhelmingly impressed. I had no idea. I mean, I had some idea, but no idea. So for our final segment, we're going to do a piece we call Off the Charts. And this is where we take a song that we think is absolutely tremendous.
Oh, God. Oh, no, no.
And but it's not quite made it onto the charts. We think it should, and we break it down. And so, K-Flay, I want to talk about your song, Blood in the Cut, off of your EP, Crush Me.
The boy I love's got another girl. He might be f***ing her right now. I don't have an apartment. Thought if I was smart, I'd make it far. But I'm still at the start. Guess I'm contagious. It'd be safest if you ran. That's what they all just end up doing in the end. Take my car and paint it black. Take my arm, break it in half. Say something, do it soon. It's too quiet in this room. I need noise. I need the buzz of a sub. Need the crack of a whip. Need some blood in the cup. I need noise. I need the buzz of a sub. Need the crack of a whip. Need some blood in the cup. I need blood in the cup. I need blood in the cut.
Would it be fair to say that this is a breakup song?
Yeah, it is a breakup song. And I think for me, what was interesting and I think ended up being reflected in it is that I wrote it when I was really sad. And then I recorded it and produced it when I wasn't sad anymore.
Ooh.
So I feel like the verses have some of that, or the original kind of spirit of my mental state in the song, and the like instrumental breakdown is the catharsis or whatever.
Cool. Yeah, I feel like this song has this an interior part and then a very exterior part.
Totally.
Moving from the verse into the chorus. So the song starts really restrained. Can you share a bit about what's going on in this opening of the song?
Yeah, I mean, I literally wrote this in my mom's basement.
Oh, jeez.
I was home for Christmas. The lyrics to this song, which are kind of a little bit jarring, I guess, at the beginning,
right.
That was just how I felt. Like, I was kind of writing stream of consciousness. And I say in there, I don't have an apartment, which was true at the time. I didn't live anywhere. So the song's pretty, it was not calculated in any way. I think it was just like I forgot about the song. I thought it never would have come out if I like hadn't played it for a couple people.
I feel like I hear that. If we just take those first two lines, I think they're so powerful, not just because of the curse word in the second line.
Right.
But because they don't rhyme.
Totally.
And
I never thought about that.
That's really kind of jarring in a way that makes the singer's state of mind very palpable, I guess.
Whoa. That is weird that they don't rhyme.
Yeah.
It makes it that much, it does land that much harder, though.
It does land kind of hard. Yeah, I mean, truly, I was not thinking about any kind of rules when I was doing this, you know, and I think that maybe some of that translated as a consequence. You know, there wasn't like a structure that I was considering.
It's super raw.
In any way, yeah.
One of the things that does guide us throughout the entire song, though, is that it is a really riff-oriented song, mm-hmm. right? There's this one thing that just pretty much goes throughout the entire track.
Yeah.
Right? I heard it almost like a blues riff.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me think actually of something like Can't Get No Satisfaction. Even though this is a really heavy song in some ways, it reckons back to old 60s, 70s riff rock.
Totally. I mean, that's largely by virtue of the fact that I'm not a very good guitar player. I was actually just watching the Metallica documentary the other couple of weeks ago, and just thinking about like riffs and how, I mean, I've always gravitated towards really, really simple, kind of bluesy, but not super sad sounding riffs, but still ones that have like an element of melancholy. And I feel like there kind of is to this one. I don't know, maybe Nate, you have an analysis of the notes. I don't really know, but yeah, I tend to like really simple things and to kind of just follow those things as far as they will take me.
Is the reference about painting the car black a reference at all to the Stones? Take my car and paint it black. Take my arm, break it in
half. Say something. Totally. Completely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was obsessed with that song as a child because it made no sense to me. And it felt like demonic.
Well, okay. Talking about demonic.
Yeah.
How does this song escalate? Where does it go?
I mean, the song really, to me, doesn't reach its climax until the end, the final chorus, when I'm doing the octave higher vocal of the hook, I guess, technically, on it. And to me, that's like the moment of real power. This is like an FU, you know, it's like the final, it's like the sign off to the letter.
Ooh.
You know? Huh. So that's where I feel like it ends up and where it, and it's a pretty short song.
Yeah.
So it just kind of ends, but like with a big loud moment.
It sounds like if we were talking about the Stones earlier, this is like if Trent Reznor did the Stones.
Oh, totally. I mean, I think what's funny is I love heavy music.
Yeah.
But I'm not really a heavy person. I feel like I'm not that, like, I'm not that dark. I'm kind of happy most of the time. And so, yeah, it's like that this song is me kind of tapping into that, you know, dipping my right foot into the pool of darkness.
No, I think no matter our dispositions, there's always a time in our lives when we just need noise and the buzz of a sub.
Mm-hmm.
I find that like so cathartic. And as Charlie was pointing out, just what a like beautiful bit of word painting that when you say the buzz of a sub.
And then
we get
that sub.
That sawtooth sub synth just slinks in underneath. That is like really, really satisfying. I need the buzz
of a sub. Well, I have to give credit right there to the producer that I worked with on this song. his name is JT Daly, and he was the one who was like, there should be a sub there. So that's really all JT. I was totally on board, of course, but yeah, that's a JT special.
If we can just stay at on this moment for 1 second, the website Genius, formerly Rap Genius, are you both familiar with that site?
Very familiar.
It's crowdsourced annotated lyrics. You can offer your own interpretations of lyrics. I just wanted to, I don't know if you've seen your page for this song, but there's some very inventive interpretations of that line.
Especially no, I don't know.
The buzz of a sub.
I don't think I know about this.
Here's one. Sub means submissive. The buzz of a sub refers to the high subs get under certain conditions. The whip reference is a straightforward extension of, and then it gets cut off, but I imagine the sort of S&M meaning here.
Whoa. That was not the intended, I mean, but that's the thing about lyric, is like, it can mean anything to anyone, and that's a great thing. But that was not my intended meaning. And I actually was not familiar that sub was an abbreviation for that.
Me neither.
I was just going like sub, sound, sub, bass, subwoofer.
I feel like with the sound in there, the literalness is pretty present. Yeah. But
But crack of the whip, you know, I get that. Yeah, that could maybe, if your mindset is like, if you have an S&M worldview, maybe you're seeing everything through the like glasses of bondage, you know, and just sort of.
I feel like you're picking up some of the metaphoric language.
You should speak. Nate, you poisoned my mind.
So, what kind of darkness are you? What's really going on in this chorus for you?
I mean, I think for me in this song, it's about being in a relationship that, for whatever reason, is not good for you, and needing external things to both distract you on some level. And I think the flip of that, though, is for me, sometimes like when I inundate myself with the feeling, when I like turn music up really loud, or when I experience something very intensely, you kind of transcend it. You know, I think the only way you get over things is by, you know, fully immersing yourself in that experience, in that feeling, and then you control it. You have power over it. Huh. So for me, the song was really about taking this feeling, amplifying it, and getting to decide what the narrative was, instead of this other person who, you know, it felt like had a lot of control over me.
Beautiful tune. Kayfla, you're heading out on tour in the U.S. and Canada?
Correct. Yeah. All of February in the U.S. and then Canada pretty much all of March, and lots of new music coming soon. So
great. And so people can find that at kayfla.com.
That's it.
And the EP is Crush Me. The song is Blood in the Cut. It's available anywhere you find the music. Listen to it. It's wonderful. Thank you so much for joining
us on
the show.
Thank you guys for having me. This is so much fun.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was truly awesome. Maybe we'll hear some Ariana Grande covers in that upcoming
you
tour
never know.
As well.
Although I really don't think I can pull that off, but.
Switched on Pop is produced by me, Nate Sloan.
And edited by me, Charlie Harding, and Bill Lance.
Huge thanks again to our special guest, Kayfla. And you can find more of our episodes on whatever podcast listener you use or online at switchedonpop.com.
If you have thoughts about the show, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at switchedonpop. We'd love to talk to you there. Switched on Pop is a proud member of the Panoply Network. And we're going to be back in 2 weeks with another episode. Until then, thanks for listening.
For listening.
Support for this show comes from Art, Beats, and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art, Beats, and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art, Beats, and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari, W., and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu.
Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.